Hey, it's Mike, and I just want to say thanks for checking out my podcast. I hope you like what I have to say. And if you do like what I have to say in the podcast, then I guarantee you're going to like my books. Now, I have several books, but the place to start is Bigger, Leaner, Stronger if you're a guy, and Thinner, Leaner, Stronger if you're a girl. I mean, these books, they're basically going to teach you everything you need to know about dieting, training, and supplementation to build muscle, lose fat, and look and feel great without having to give up all the foods you love or live in the gym grinding through workouts that you hate. Now, you can find these books everywhere you can buy them online, you know, Amazon, Audible, iBooks, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and so forth. And if you're into audiobooks like me, you can actually get one of them for free with a 30-day free trial of Audible. To do that, go to www.muscleforlife, that's muscleforlife.com/audiobooks, and you can see how to do that there. I make my living primarily as a writer, so as you can imagine, every book sold helps, so please do check out my books if you haven't already. Now, also, if you like my work in general, then I think you're going to really like what I'm doing with my supplement company, Legion. As you may know, I'm really not a fan of the supplement industry. I've wasted who knows how much money over the years on worthless junk supplements and have always had trouble finding products that I actually liked and felt were worth buying. And that's why I finally decided to just make my own. Now, a few of the things that make my supplements unique are: one, they're 100% naturally sweetened and flavored. Two, all ingredients are backed by peer-reviewed scientific research that you can verify for yourself, because we explain why we've chosen each ingredient and we cite all supporting studies on our website, which means you can dive in and go validate everything that we say. Three, all ingredients are also included at clinically effective dosages, which are the exact dosages used in the studies proving their effectiveness. And four, there are no proprietary blends, which means that you know exactly what you're buying. Our formulations are 100% transparent. So if that sounds interesting to you, then head over to legionathletics.com. That's L-E-G-I-O-N athletics.com. And you can learn a bit more about the supplements that I have, as well as my mission for the company, because I want to accomplish more than just sell supplements. I really want to try to make a change for the better in the supplement industry, because I think it's long overdue. And ultimately, if you like what you see and you want to buy something, then you can use the coupon code PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, and you'll save 10% on your first order. So thanks again for taking the time to listen to my podcast, and let's get to the show. Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. In this episode, I want to talk a bit about dieting. This isn't necessarily coming from the Q&A that I'm running or the moderator, Google moderator, or anything like that. But of course, I get a lot of questions related to diet, and there's just a lot of bad information out there. So specifically, I want to talk about a couple popular diets, like paleo, and gluten-free is pretty popular right now. Low carb in general is pretty popular. And some of the pros and cons, and then also talk a bit about flexible dieting, which is what I recommend everybody do, unless you have a good reason, like a real food allergy or some sort of problem, some reason why you can't, you know. But then again, flexible dieting doesn't mean you can't do flexible dieting. It just means your diet's not going to be as flexible as other people's. And then how to set up your meal plans properly. So if you already know, how to diet properly, if you already know about energy balance and macronutrient balance, and you know that it's not the foods that you eat that matter so much, it's how much we eat and all that, then you're still going to enjoy the meal planning part of it, because there are right and wrong ways to set up your meal plans. Even if you know that you can eat whatever foods you want, in terms of how you go about it, you can make it easier or harder to reach your goals. So first, let's talk a bit about diets. So let's just take paleo first, because it's very, very popular. Probably, kind of rides on the coattails of CrossFit. So you have a lot of interest in it. A lot of people doing it, and a lot of books being sold about it, and it's just out there. And the ironic thing about the paleo diet is that it's not inherently a bad diet. It's not necessarily an unhealthy diet. I think the saturated fat intake is a bit high, and I know that you have two conflicting schools of thought right now about saturated fat. One is saying that the old research that, the research that was done decades ago, that was used to justify the current recommendations of no more than 10% of your daily calories coming from saturated fat, you know, because of heart health and so forth. There are people, and, you know, there are not just people, but there are scientists, experts, that basically point out the flaws in that research and show, more recent research or reference more recent research, or in some cases are the people doing the more recent research showing that, it might not be as big of a problem as we once thought. But there is another school of thought of, you know, people that are equally qualified to be talking about it. Other researchers, other scientists that are saying, well, hold on, you know, before we just say that, yes, basically acknowledging that there were flaws in, you know, the research that these original recommendations were based on, but saying that just because that research has some flaws doesn't necessarily mean that we can just eat all the saturated fat that we want and it's going to cause no problems. So in looking at everything myself and just based on the information that I have and the knowledge that I have, I tend to side more with the group saying, well, yes, saturated fat may not be as big of an issue as we once thought, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we should be getting 30% of our daily calories from saturated fat, because that still might cause issues, mainly related to heart health. So I think it's better to play it safe in that regard. Like personally, I don't get more than 10 or 15% of my daily calories from saturated fat, and I also make sure to get some unsaturated fat in my diet as well. And yeah, I think that's the safe play and it's the smart play. And, you know, is it really necessary to eat huge amounts of saturated fat every day? I don't think so. Unless you just, you know, love bacon and love butter and love other meats and love, you know, coconut oil and stuff like that. Every time, you know, on the other hand, if you are going to have a couple pieces of bacon, or you're going to put some butter on this, or you're going to use some coconut oil when you cook or whatever, you can know that you can have a decent amount of it. Like for instance, if you're eating 2,500 calories a day, the standard recommendation right now would be that no more than 250 of those calories should come from saturated fat. 250 calories of saturated fat, that's a fair amount. That's a couple, you know, 2.5 tablespoons. So, you know, that means you could do your, if you do the coffee, the bulletproof coffee thing, which I should write an article on because it's kind of stupid and silly. Anyways, I think, would you want more than 2 to 3 tablespoons of saturated fat a day? Maybe. So back to paleo, that's maybe my one critique with what's being, prescribed, in terms of foods. But what is silly about paleo is what is being proscribed, what is being, you know, forbidden. And, like they're just, the science is, that's where it kind of just veers off, and kind of falls off a cliff. And in that, what is the paleo diet, the standard no grains, you know, I think it depends how hardcore you want to be with it. There's Mark Sisson's thing, primal, which is kind of a more flexible type of paleo where you can eat like sweet potatoes and, you know, and then he's kind of come around and basically said like, yeah, if you want to have some grains here and there, it's not really a problem. Because when you start looking at the research, which I'm actually going to link an article down below on paleo, or if you're listening to this, you can just go to muscleforlife.com and search for paleo. If you really want to dive into it, and because I don't want to spend 20 minutes breaking down from a scientific, you know, angle paleo diet. I just want to talk about it kind of broadly, but basically the bottom line is the restrictions of no grains, of if you're going real hardcore, I think it's no sweet potatoes, right? Definitely no white potato. Yeah, I think legumes are also off the list. And so basically a lot of the foods that you're told you can't eat, there's no good reason why you shouldn't be eating them, because they are nutritious foods. Now, if your body just doesn't do well with them, then that's another thing. And you would know that though. Like a very simple way to determine what foods you should and shouldn't eat are, so in one camp, you have just junk shit food that obviously you shouldn't be eating much of, like just worthless calories, candy, Pop-Tarts, packaged baked goods, you know, that you package donuts and fucking chips and shit. I mean, but that's obvious. I mean, if you're getting a lot of your daily calories from foods like that, you are going to have health problems one day, and that's not surprising. But those are the foods that you really should just be generally avoiding, foods with trans fat, you know, breakfast cereals and just stuff like that. Microwavable dinners, whatever, you get the idea. And then you have a bunch of foods though that you can be, you know, you can choose from that are nutritious, like, of course, fruits and vegetables and whole grains and high quality proteins, including red meat, and legumes and, you know, potatoes, sweet potatoes, yams. There's just a long, long list of foods that provide a lot of nutritional value and are also good for, you know, fitting your macronutrient needs. And you should be able to eat from that list, so long as you know what you're doing with your intake and with your numbers. But if certain foods cause GI issues, like every time you eat something, you just don't feel good, or your stomach gets bloated, or you get gassy or whatever, stop eating it. Like, it's really that simple. And that's really the only way, you know, when we talk about food intolerance testing, like ALCAT testing, the problem with that is you're going to get a lot of false positives. And this has been shown in research. And my mom is super into it. She goes and sees some doctor guy that takes all of her, has her do interesting things that don't really work. And so, you know, she'll get this long list of foods, all these things that she's not supposed to eat. And there's just no way that your body is intolerant to like 42 different foods. Bullshit. Especially a lot of the foods like that she would eat those foods and feel nothing. There'd be no issues. Whereas certain foods on the list actually would cause issues. Like if she eats too much wheat, then her stomach does get bloated and she gets gassy and stuff. But you know, she knew that before she ever got tested, or before gluten-free or wheat-free or any of that ever became popular. She just knew that, you know, certain types of wheat products, or if she ate too much wheat, it would upset her stomach. And then there's other foods on her like don't eat list that are valid, but there are a lot of foods that she's like, well, I've eaten that food for years and never had any issues, but then she just follows it just cause. But anyway, so the point is, the only real way to determine food intolerances is to eliminate foods and then challenge with. So, you know, if you are having a lot of GI issues, if you're having like IBS type symptoms and stuff, you'd want to be cutting out a lot of different types of foods and paring down to very, you could say like gut neutral type foods that are not associated with any sort of gastrointestinal distress. And then you get that as a baseline where your symptoms are down, you're feeling good. And then you'd add a food in, see, you know, how does it make you feel? And if you're fine, add another food up. That food makes you feel bad, kick it out. And, that, you know, it takes time and it takes obviously documenting what's going on. But if there are people that need to do that just because, you know, their, bodies just, they can't handle anything. So anyways, my point is, that it's a very personalized approach. So when you have diets that just broadly restrict food of any kind, really, even complete shit food, like, candy and all that stuff. If you like to eat that stuff and you want to have it, you know, occasionally, have it. It's not like having, you know, if 80% of your, I wouldn't use the 80-20 for just crap. But if you look at it this way, let's say, you know, during the week, every day, the majority of your calories come from nutritious foods. You're exercising, you're maybe even supplementing with some things that improve your health. And so you're doing all that stuff right. And then one day a week, you want to have, let's say, 1,000 calories of something that's shit. Is that really going to harm you? Probably not. I mean, you'd have to really try hard. It'd have to be like 1,000 calories of pure trans fat to really mess you up. So, you know, that it's just, so when diets broadly restrict foods where it doesn't quite make sense, like, why should you not be able to eat a white potato? It's one of the most nutritious, if not the most nutrient dense food actually out there. It's very satiating. It's very filling. It's good when you're dieting for that reason. Although it is kind of calorie dense, but there's just no good reason to not be able to eat a potato or white rice. There's no good reason. Like, sure, brown rice has a bit more nutrition and I prefer the taste of brown rice generally, but if you want to have some white rice, why should you not be able to eat white rice? And, you know, there are different arguments. Say, oh, well, you know, the anti-nutrients and stuff. Yeah, but that's not That's just taking one little thing and playing it up like it's this big menacing problem when it's not. And when there's research that shows that it's not, it's just not a problem, especially if you cook like beans and stuff, if you cook them correctly, and your body can digest and absorb them just fine. So it's kind of like in the scientific evolution of things, you have theories based on isolated types of research. And then those theories get tested later in a real life with a live person type setting, and sometimes they don't play out, where theoretically maybe these anti-nutrients should be a problem, but then when they actually go and test it with people, they find out that the bodies have ways to work around these problems, or you know, with how food is cooked, it gets rid of the problem. And so you know, that theory. But then what some people will do is they'll just ignore that you know, the actual clinical trial type research, and they'll just go to the theoretical research or the epidemiological research and just kind of focus in on that and use that to sell you on something. So with paleo, if you really like eating that way, sure. I mean, do it, but don't think that, you know, you're going to be harming your health by eating some whole grains or eating some potato or eating some legumes or eating really any of the foods that paleo says the paleo doctrine says that you can't eat, because that's where that diet just kind of goes off the deep end. Another thing about it is in terms of weight gain or weight loss, a lot of people, the reason why they are, you know, adopting a certain diet is to change their body composition. There's health, of course, and you know, certain people they're jumping into diets for health reasons, but a lot of people are looking for diet advice or diets to follow because they want to build muscle or lose fat. And that's where diets like the paleo diet and gluten-free and low carb in general and stuff, they can't reliably live up to their promises. And the reason why is, when you boil it all down, as you probably know, if you follow my work at all, or are just well informed, if you're going to lose weight, you know, it's going to be because you're eating less energy than you're burning. If you're going to gain weight, it's because that you're eating more energy than you're burning. And that's really the bottom line, is you have energy balance. Of course, it does matter in terms of macronutrients and where do those calories come from? Are you eating, you know, a low protein diet, a high protein diet, where are your carbs at, where are your fats at? Those things do matter. But first and foremost is energy balance. Now, when you have a diet that restricts a lot of calorie dense foods that people like to eat, like low carb dieting, for instance, there's a good chance that a person is going to place themselves in a calorie deficit. They don't know what's going on. They don't realize that it's a calorie deficit that causes the weight loss. They think it's the fact that they cut out, you know, that bowl of pasta they were eating at lunch every day or something like that. They think that, oh, so the carbs were keeping me fat. No, the calories were keeping them fat. And by cutting out the calories, wow, they're losing weight. Big surprise. So this is just a mistake of causation. What's actually causing the weight loss? It's not the elimination of the specific food. It's the reduction of the calories. And that's why a lot of mainstream diets, they stay away from numbers. They don't want, because they know that people don't really like to plan or track numbers, calories, macronutrients. They don't want to think like that. They just want to have a, you know, I can eat these foods and I can't eat those foods. These are the meals I can have for losing weight. These are the meals I can have for gaining muscle. And they want it, you know, real, real simple like that. And that's fine. But the problem, there's just a lot of ways it can go wrong. Because for instance, if you, let's say you start doing a paleo diet and you cut out some of the more calorie dense types of carbs that you've been eating, and you don't replace them with very calorie dense fats, which people do, and we're going to talk about in a second, and you place yourself in a calorie deficit, good, you're going to lose weight. You're going to lose fat. And if you are doing some weightlifting, you're eating enough protein, there's a good chance that you're not going to lose muscle, and that's good. But that calorie deficit may be too large. Who knows? You don't know how big it is, because if you don't know how much energy you're burning, you don't know how much energy you're eating, you might be in a 1,000 calorie deficit, you know, every day, and that's not good for the body. That causes a bit more of the metabolic adaptation, if you've heard of that, where your metabolism slows down. Your body just adjusts to reduce its energy expenditure the less food you feed it, which just makes sense. I mean, even just, you know, from a biological standpoint, it's trying to balance out input with output. But there are hormonal changes that can occur that are non-optimum. And a large calorie deficit, especially if you're exercising a lot, especially if you're doing a lot of cardio, is one of the things that causes it can be pretty dramatic in terms of muscle loss. So you really want to be in a moderately aggressive calorie deficit of about 20 to 25%, meaning if you want to lose fat, you should be eating about 75 to 80% of the calories you're burning every day. If you can stay in that range and you can eat enough protein and not do too much exercise and make sure you're doing some resistance training, especially some heavy resistance training, then you're going to be golden. You're going to lose fat. You're going to preserve muscle. It's very easy. It can even just be enjoyable. I mean, dieting does not have to be grueling at all. But too big of a deficit. But what if following the rules of the diet, paleo, whatever, places you in a very small deficit? So then weight loss is very slow because you're only in a 5 or 10% deficit. And the downside there is it can just be frustrating. So you're only losing a half pound a week in the beginning. Let's say you're quite overweight and you should be able to comfortably lose 1 to 2 pounds of fat a week and you're losing a quarter to a half pound a week. Okay. That means you just have to endure it longer. There's also the longer you're dieting, the more things can go wrong, the more likely you are to get frustrated and give up or life gets in the way. And, when I'm dieting to lose fat, my goal is to basically lose the fat as quickly as possible. I want to use, like I said, a moderately aggressive calorie deficit. I want to use any supplements I can that are natural, safe, and that work to speed up fat loss. I want to do as much exercise as I can that without causing problems, because the more exercise you do, the more calories you're going to burn, which helps you lose fat faster. And so my goal is to lose that fat as quickly as possible so I can come out of the calorie deficit and enjoy my training again, and just not have to be in a deficit. Because after being in a deficit for, it actually varies from person to person. I start to feel it about 6 weeks in is when I start to feel it. When my energy levels are a bit lower, my workouts are I'll lose a couple reps and they're just tougher and everything feels heavy, and it's nice to get that over with, basically. That when you don't, without really knowing your numbers, you see there's just a lot up in the air. And especially, who knows? You may be eating enough protein. You may not be eating enough protein. You may be eating a ton of saturated fat. This is more on the paleo side of things. You may, you're not going to be eating too little fat if you're on that diet. But I think it's much smarter to know your numbers and go by numbers, so you can just know for sure you're guaranteed results in that way, essentially, as opposed to following a long list of rules of what you can't eat at this time, don't eat at that time, blah, blah, blah. And then just hoping that basically that you're in a calorie deficit in the end. All that shit is just to put you in a calorie deficit and try to make it as painless as possible. A problem that also, especially low carb and paleo, and just people I know personally and people I've heard from, they run into where they think that they don't have a concept of energy balance and how it really works. So they cut out some calories from the carbs and stuff they're eating. Then they add very calorie dense fatty I don't care if they're healthy fats, avocado and blah, blah, and butter is, obviously to a point, going back to that saturated fat point, olive oil, et cetera, nuts and stuff. Yes. Those are all great foods and you should be able to eat them. But if you don't understand the numbers of it all, then what happens is people will cut out the carbs, which reduces their calorie intake. And then they add in way too many fats and that brings their calorie intake back up to where it was before. Or in many cases, they start eating more calories than they were before they went on the diet and they gain weight. I've heard from quite a few women in particular that went to the paleo diet to try to lose weight and ended up gaining weight and didn't understand why. And when I dug into their diet a little bit, so they were eating all kinds of paleo approved, mainly dessert type stuff, or maybe not dessert, but breads and muffins, and that's kind of dessert, and pasta and stuff that normally, because they didn't have a concept of calories, they thought, well, it's on my diet, so I can eat it. And one of the problems with very fatty foods that just have a lot of fat in them is you're going to get a lot of calories and not necessarily a lot of satiety. You're not necessarily going to get very full from a very fatty meal, whereas a high carb meal is more likely to fill you up. One of the reasons for this is simply volume. So, you know, if you eat a big bowl of pasta, for instance, that there's a lot going into your stomach. But if you're eating a paleo muffin that has a lot of butter in it, the calories, you know, again, let's say two muffins, right, to make the calories a little bit more comparable. But the point is, you know, two smaller muffins, it just is not going to fill you up nearly as much as, a larger amount of pasta. Or pasta is pretty calorie dense, so maybe it's not the best example, but, you could take rice or you could take quinoa or things like that, that are fairly carb dense, fairly calorie dense, but they fill you up. Or going back to the potato, take potato, match that calorie for calorie to something like a fatty type of paleo approved food, and the potato is going to keep you fuller quite a bit longer. So that's kind of the bigger picture on just diets in general, whether it be paleo, whether it be low carb or gluten-free. Gluten-free is obviously super popular right now. And I'll link an article down below. I don't want to go into another like 15-minute diatribe on gluten-free, but there's no reason, basically no reason, it's very unlikely that you have a reason to follow a gluten-free diet. Basically, it's for people with celiac disease, is the long story short. And I talk about this in the article, so you can go read it. If personally, like, to really play it safe, it's probably best to not eat a ton of gluten every day. That there's some research and there's some good arguments that can be made for that. But should you fear gluten and should you avoid gluten-containing foods altogether? No, there's no good reason to do that. again, unless you have celiac disease, then you have to, or you're going to end up dying one day. Essentially, celiac can be that bad if you don't diagnose it, and you keep on beating the shit out of your small intestines until they can't absorb nutrients anymore, essentially, and you can get some serious diseases. There's a lot of comorbidity when you're looking at celiac, meaning that celiac, if it's untreated and if there's enough time that has gone on and enough damage that has been done to the small intestines, other diseases can now enter the picture, serious diseases, fatal diseases. Again, a lot of people turn to gluten-free not because they're afraid of, what might happen to their small intestines, but because they're trying to lose weight. And gluten-free for losing weight, again, ironically, a lot of gluten-free foods have more calories than their gluten-containing counterparts, and are less nutritious. And these are more like prepackaged type gluten-free foods. My diet, incidentally, is fairly gluten-free just because the foods I eat, these days, I guess that's not true because I have a lot of oatmeal. That's what I really like. Like, I'm doing these baked oatmeal dishes. I'm such a robot. I'll just eat, like, I'll find something I like that sits well with my body and tastes good, and I'll just eat it for months on end, and it tastes delicious to me every time. So it's like, it's a gift. I'm glad it makes it simple. I don't have to think about what I'm going to be eating because I just eat the same foods every day. I'm not even cutting. And I could be eating a larger variety of foods, but honestly, I don't even want to think about it. Like, I don't want to think about the clothes I wear every day. I don't want to think about the food that I'm going to be eating because I have too many other things to think about, too many other decisions to make. So I just go on robo mode, but I enjoy it. So, before I was doing the, I'm getting a lot of carbs from oatmeal right now because I'm doing all these like baked oatmeal dishes at night. They're super good. Where if you want to try it, I do about a cup and a half or a cup to 3/4 of a cup of oatmeal. I cut up various types of fruit like bananas or peaches. Plums are really good. Strawberries bake really well. Even green grapes. I love green grapes. So they don't bake the best, but they taste good. Whatever fruits you like, raspberries and stuff. And so I'll do about like maybe 50, 75 carbs of fruit. And then you have a cup and a half to a cup and 3/4 of oatmeal. I like to mix instant oatmeal and the heavier oatmeal just for mouthfeel. Some applesauce to give it in terms of applesauce, how much is it? Probably about a quarter to about a half a cup of applesauce, which gives it it just improves mouthfeel. It doesn't change the taste so much that I can tell, but it gives it a chewier, better mouthfeel. And I put I like cinnamon, so I put a fair amount. I probably put about two teaspoons. I at this point, I'm just kind of, but it's probably about 2 teaspoons of cinnamon, some nutmeg, some cacao powder. I think that's how you pronounce it, or is it cocoa powder, which is cacao and cocoa? I don't know. It's the chocolatey powder that has no, there's nothing in it. It's just powder. It's like, but I like dark chocolate. So it's that bitter type of chocolate flavor, and some vanilla extract, some almond extract, some maple extract. And I've tried also some banana extract. You have to go easy on that stuff, though. I found out the hard way. You put too much of that and it tastes weird. And what else? I'm forgetting something. Oh, some stevia, about a teaspoon for sweetness, and usually about a tablespoon to 2 tablespoons of maple syrup. So for sweetness. So it's a lot of carbs, and my body does well with carbs. I don't know. I'll eat it all and I'll just be like, all right, cool. And just go on with working basically. So my diet right now actually I'm not using gluten-free oats, but that was such a random tangent. But my point was, like, before I was doing the email, the oatmeal, and again, I'm not even actually sure how much gluten is in oatmeal compared to something like bread, but, or pasta. But on a day-to-day basis, the amount of gluten that I would eat is just not very high. Just because the foods that I'm eating doesn't require it. Like, doesn't require bread or doesn't require pasta. I'll do pasta. I usually do pasta once a week on the weekend. I'll make some sort of pasta, make a massive bowl of, like, you know, 10 to 12 ounces of pasta and just go hard and enjoy it. Save, you know, a good chunk of my daily calories and carbs for that meal. But I'll notice sometimes when I do that, I mean, that's a lot of pasta. So it's not surprising that sometimes my stomach gets a little bit like, I'll just feel a little bit, it feels a little bit off. I don't know. But that's probably just because I'm eating so much pasta. It's ridiculous. But my point is if you are eating the right foods, if the majority of your calories are coming from the right foods, your diet is probably going to be relatively low in gluten, because you're not just going to be getting all your carbs from gluten-containing foods. But there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to eat some bread if you like bread, or eat some, what are the common, obviously there's pasta, the oatmeal has some gluten. I guess there are trace amounts of gluten in a lot of different things, and you just don't have to worry about it. Unless you notice it upsets your stomach. Like, if my stomach got upset from eating all that pasta, I wouldn't do it. It doesn't get upset. I just can feel, sometimes it'd be a little bit constipated the next day, or sometimes it's just, you know, I wouldn't do that every day. I wouldn't eat a ton of pasta every day, because that would eventually upset my stomach. I think it's when if I did it, like, sometimes I'll do it 2 days in a row and then I'll feel a little bit off. So I only do it, you know, once a week, and it doesn't bother me. So that's all the dieting stuff. Let's now transition over to flexible dieting, which is what I'm a big proponent of. I'll link an article down below if you want to learn a bit more about flexible dieting. And for those listening, you can just go on, I wrote about it just recently, actually, on my blog over at Legion, which is legionathletics.com, L-E-G-I-O-N athletics.com. If you go to blog, we don't have a search function yet, which is stupid. But we had to fire our web dev team because they're terrible, and we're bringing a new company on. And so it's on the list. We're going to have a search function on the blog, but I think it's on like page 2 right now. If you go and find, there's an article on flexible dieting. And what was, there was an article I mentioned just, on gluten-free. Yeah, there's also the gluten-free article over at Legion on the blog as well. You'll find that. I think it's on page 2. Who knows? By the time you get to hear this, the search function may be fixed. But flexible dieting is basically you have certain macronutrient needs. So protein, carbohydrates, fat, and the foods that you eat to get there are of your choosing. So get the majority of your calories from nutritious foods. Don't use that as an excuse to just eat junk all day, or you will have problems. It will catch up with you. So that means, you know, food that you're preparing yourself, a few servings of fruit and vegetables a day, whole grains, blah, blah, blah. It's all you've heard this before. And if not, you can just check out the article. So let's talk about meal planning though. So, I'm a big proponent of meal planning. Meal planning is great for, especially great for fat loss, because it guarantees results. If you're trying to lose fat, I highly recommend you just make yourself a meal plan and stick to it. Eat the same foods every day until you get sick of something, and then swap that food out for something else. Eat that every day. It is the easiest way to guarantee results. If that sounds like hell to you, Okay. Then I don't know. I mean, I guess you can try to wing it, which is what I was talking about before, where, okay, you're just going to try to cut out certain foods and you don't know where your intake is and you don't know if you're in a big deficit or a little deficit. And you're kind of just going to let the mirror and let the scale. And, you know, if you're taking any sort of measurements, kind of guide you and tell you if you're doing it right or wrong. If that sounds okay to you, do that. But that sounds stupid to me. I would rather just do something that I know is going to work and get it over with and move on with my life. So that's where meal planning comes in. And what meal planning is, of course, is you plan out your meals. So you go, okay, at this time, I'm going to be eating these foods. Go over to calorieking.com, work out the numbers. Well, first you start with your numbers. So what if you want to lose fat, you're determining how much energy you're burning every day. You're eating, let's say you're going to eat 75% of that. So there's your calorie number. You're going to break that down into protein, carbs, and fat. So protein, if you're dieting to lose fat, I recommend a bit higher intake. About 1 gram per pound is fine. Or if you're leaner, if you're a guy at about 10, 11, 12%, you want to get really lean, I would bump that up to 1.2 grams per pound. If you're a girl at 20-ish percent, you want to get really lean, I would, you know, bump it up to 1.2. And your fats don't need to be higher than 0.2 or 0.25 grams per pound. And the rest of your calories can come from carbohydrate. So there are your numbers. You take those numbers and you go, okay, so for me, for instance, if I were to cut right now, I would start at probably about 200. I'm about 190 pounds. So I'd probably start at like 210 protein, maybe 200 carb and like 50 fat, just to keep it real simple. And then I would go make a meal plan out of that. And, so I'd take those numbers and go, okay, so the first thing you have to look at is, your meal frequency. How frequently do you like to eat? And that kind of determines, like, that's determined by how large do you like your meals to be. I like to eat every few hours because that's just what I enjoy. Like, I work out early in the morning. I like to come here, have a shake. My post-workout meal is just a shake. It's also my breakfast. I like to eat about, 12 o'clock. Have a salad with some chicken. That's what I've been eating these days, and it's good, and some vegetables in there and stuff. And then I like to have some protein again in the afternoon, about 3 p.m. And then I like to eat dinner about 6 or 6:30. My dinner's a bit bigger. And then I'm doing this oatmeal thing at like maybe 9:30 or 10 or so. That's just the way that I like to eat. A lot of other people, that works for me. Also, I don't really get hungry. So I don't have to deal with that for whatever reason. Like, I can feel that I need food or that my energy is a bit lower, but I don't get hunger issues. I just don't. So I just eat on whatever fits my work schedule best. And that's basically, I don't want to be spending time prepping food, cooking food in the day, going out to lunches and stuff. I just want to work. So I'll spend a little bit more time eating at night, even though I'm working at night, but hey, gotta take some time to eat. So that's for me. But if you like to do a bigger breakfast, you might structure it totally differently. You might come and eat a big breakfast and then eat a smaller lunch and then go from lunch to dinner, where maybe you have a big dinner again, maybe you have a smaller dinner and then you don't like eating after dinner. Totally fine. Where you time your meals means nothing. The only exception, I'd say, or the only caveat is that it's probably a good idea. And you look at the bulk of the research available to have some protein before and after you train, or if you're training fasted, have some protein after you train. And some carbs as well. If you're trying to maximize muscle, if you're trying to build muscle and strength, you want to have some carbs after you train as well. And in general, you want your carb intake to be, as high as you can go, essentially, without eating too little fats that, impairs your health. So you have your protein set at about, say, 1 gram per pound. If your fat set at, maybe if you were trying to gain muscle and strength, you go a little bit higher, maybe 0.3 grams per pound. And then the rest of your calories from carbohydrates. That's the best setup for gaining muscle and strength, because it's going to give you your best workouts. You're going to be strong in the gym. Also, higher insulin levels throughout the day means that there's less protein breakdown that's occurring. I've spoken about these things in different podcasts, written about it quite a bit of research on this. Anyway, the point is, so you have your pre and post workout meals, or no pre-workout meal and a post-workout meal. Otherwise, it's really up to you. Your body can absorb large amounts of protein in every meal. So, to be safe, if you are a guy, 150 pounds or higher, or heavier, you can eat upwards of 70, 80, 90, 100 grams of protein in a meal, and your body will be able to use it. If you're, so as you get heavier, it's just, and who wants to eat more than that in one meal? Like for me, I like eating about 50 grams of protein in a meal. That's enough for me, 30 to 50. It keeps me full. I enjoy, you know, different types of protein that I eat. I like, it comes from like Greek yogurt or meats of different kind, chicken, pork, sometimes red meat, you know, sometimes turkey bacon, blah, 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 whatever. Also like my dinner, there's beans, there's vegetables, some protein there. So you can lay it out really however you want is the point. Now, there are a couple things that you should keep in mind though. If you are cutting, if you're dieting for fat loss, you're going to want to stick to foods that are going to keep you full. Because most people, biggest problems they run into, with trying to lose fat are hunger and cravings. So, and those just derail you because if every day that you overeat, you just set yourself back a little bit, where you're going to lose a little bit less fat that day, or maybe you ate way too much and you gained some fat that day. And the best diet is that you can stick to, right? That, you know, that cliched statement, has some truth in it though. So that means that you should definitely be sticking to foods that you like. Don't restrict all the foods that you enjoy eating when you're dieting. Trust in the numbers, basically. And if that means like, when I'm dieting, I really like chocolate. That's like my dessert, basically. I mean, I guess the oatmeal kind of is a dessert, but not really because it's nutritious. There's a lot of nutrients in there. There's, you know, several servings of fruit. There's the oatmeal. I forgot on the, going back on the recipe, where all those, like the extracts and all that stuff, I put it in about a cup and a half of skim milk is the base. And then all the cinnamon and all the spices and extracts and stuff mix into that. And then pour the whole mixture in. Also, I do one egg as well. Pour the whole mixture into the oatmeal, mix it all up, and then bake it. I bake it at 400 for about like 20 minutes, I think, and it's done. that, you know, it's not really dessert. It's very nutritious. But my dessert, I just like chocolate a lot. So, but even if I were cutting, I still would save some calories for chocolate. I save maybe 150, 200 calories a day for chocolate. And, don't feel bad. Don't feel that, you know, it's just numbers. So if you don't like chocolate, but you like some ice cream and you want to have, you know, I don't know, a quarter of a pint of ice cream after every dinner because that's what you enjoy the most, do it. Fit it into your numbers. As long as you're getting the majority of your calories from nutritious foods, it's totally fine. And back to meal planning, those little things are important, including something that even if it's just psychological, that's great. There's, you know, for a lot of people, dieting is just as much of a psychological burden as a physical burden. So do what you can to mitigate that. Also, in your meal timing, coming back to when do you like to eat? When do you generally get hungry? Are you at your hungriest in the afternoons? Well, then you might want to think with that. So you might want to eat a bigger lunch. You might want to save more of those calories for lunch. So then you can, you know, avoid the mid-afternoon snacking. Is nighttime, like let's say, you know, for whatever reason, you tend to overeat at night. Okay, so maybe you should do something like what I'm doing, where you're saving a lot of your calories for dinner. And maybe, I could eat them all at dinner, but that's a lot of food. Like that, makes me a little bit tired just from I forget the name of the hormone. There's a hormone your body releases when you eat a lot of food. The more food you eat, the more it gets released and it induces sleepiness. And that'll hit me sometimes. And I have to work at night, so I don't like, and I'm usually writing at night, so I need to be mentally, like I don't want to feel sluggish at all. But maybe you want to just eat a big, big dinner. You want to eat, I don't care, 1500 calories for your dinner, save it, fine. Or maybe you want to do really what I'm doing, where my dinner is probably about 50 carb, 10 fat, maybe 15 fat, and about 40 to 50 protein. That's my dinner. And then I'll have, you know, the oatmeal, which is a lot of carbs. It depends on like what I'm putting in there, but it's probably about 200-ish, maybe a little bit more carbs, and, you know, another 10 fat, and, you know, a bit of protein. I have it with Greek yogurt as well. That's what I eat it with. And it's like super delicious. So the Greek yogurt, I'm getting, you know, maybe another 50 protein in the whole thing. So that's just knowing your body though. That's just knowing your personal preferences. Now when you're dieting for fat loss, like I was saying, you want to stick to foods that are going to fill you up. So this is where what you eat, there are no foods that are good or bad for weight loss per se. There are no foods that directly you know, cause you to gain weight or get in the way of losing weight, but there are foods that are more conducive to it, both gaining weight and losing weight. Obviously, foods that are conducive to losing weight are foods that are going to fill you up. High fiber type foods, foods with volume. That's really the key that you want to go for. When you want to be full, you want to go for volume. That's what matters most, meaning the amount of food that you're putting in your stomach, the actual physical like weight of it in its, you know, the space it takes up. That is more important than the calories. And that's why calorie-dense foods, going back to stuff like paleo, like the very fatty type of foods, they suck because they eat up so many of your calories, but they don't provide the amount of fullness, which then means that, like, you know, there's a big difference between being full for 3 hours and being full for 2 hours and then having to battle through hunger for an hour, you know, several times a day. That is going to either just wear on you mentally, but you're going to stay strong and not give in and not eat, or it's just going to cause you to overeat, and then you're going to be dragging the whole thing out or maybe never even reaching your goal. So you want to be sticking to foods that are lower in calories and higher in satiety. Coming back to this is fibrous type of stuff. Well, first, before we talk about fibers, let's talk about protein. Protein is very filling, as you've probably experienced, but there's also, of course, research on it. So that's why, one, a high protein diet is crucial for losing fat and preserving muscle for many different reasons, but this is one of the reasons that it's going to keep you full. If you're eating protein every few hours, it's just less likely that you're going to have hunger issues. Again, you don't have to eat every few hours. I do like it, but if you don't or it doesn't work for you, then who cares? Eat on the schedule that you need to eat on. But do eat protein with each meal because it's going to help. And in terms of what to eat, of course, you want to stick with leaner cuts of meat like chicken, you know, low fat, red meats, low fat ground. I like ground turkey. There's even like turkey bacon, for instance, is good. I've been getting this other bacon too. I think it's called like Sunday bacon, where it's like basically the same macros of turkey bacon. It just tastes better. I think it's like 1 gram of fat per slice. And you know, low fat dairy. And so just fats make things taste better. Yes, they do, but they're very calorie dense and you just can't afford it when you're dieting for fat loss, if you're also going to keep your carbohydrate intake relatively high, which you want to do. If you are a weightlifter, you want to do that. Trust me, it is way better. Other foods are whole grain foods like wheat, brown rice, barley. Those are filling. And yes, they're fairly carb dense, but they're a good, a good source of nutrition, and they are going to keep you fuller than the more refined types of grains. And of course, you have vegetables. And my vegetables, what I like the most is I really like green beans. Green beans are quite filling, and you can prepare them in a lot of different ways. They're lower in calories. I like peas a lot, a bit higher in calories, but they're good. I like cruciferous vegetables a lot. I mean, I like pretty much all vegetables. So you can kind of go with what you like. I like to eat a variety of vegetables because, of course, they have different micronutritional values. So I like to, you know, I need a fair amount of cruciferous vegetables just like my body does. I took this DNA test a bit ago, and that was one of the things is that my body has an elevated need for cruciferous vegetables. So I try to eat pretty regularly, like broccoli or cauliflower are my choices there. But vegetables in general, that's one of the reasons why they're considered good for like good diet foods, is because they're low in calories and they're going to fill you up. You can eat a lot of them. You can stuff your stomach full of vegetables. And, you know, for like 50 carbs, you can be really, really full. 50 carbs of vegetables is like, you are not going to be hungry for a bit. Plus some protein. That's a good, at least 3 or 4 hours before you're going to even feel like you could eat again. Legumes, you know, I like beans. I mean, I stick to all kinds of varieties of beans. Again, a bit more calorie dense, but they're nutritious and pretty filling. Tubers, like I was talking about earlier. So white potato is great, very filling. Sweet potatoes are good, of course. I like yams as well. I like sweet potatoes more. So those are the types of foods that you want to be sticking to. And each meal, when you are cutting, when you're dieting for fat loss, has to have some protein and something else that's going to be filling. So it's going to be a whole grain. It's going to be a vegetable. There are fruits. What are the more fibrous fruits? I know apples are filling. I don't know. I don't eat a wide variety of fruits usually, although these days I've been baking with them, but it's been a while since I've just had like a protein shake with a piece of fruit. And apples, what came to mind? Like I'd always eat apples when I was cutting, and I would have fruit for snacks. I would stick to apples because I think they're really good and they're filling for the calories, and you know, they're a bit lower calorie than something like a banana for the amount of volume that you get out of it. But more fibrous fruits are good as well. So each meal, that's what you want. You want some protein and you want something else that's going to be filling. And that's the best way to stay as full as possible for as long as possible. Now, on the other hand, let's say you're trying to gain weight. And so you need to be eating, you know, quite a bit more calories. You need to be in a calorie surplus. And some guys, they run into the problem where they have to eat so much food, it actually is uncomfortable to them. Like I've spoken with a lot of guys that are 150, 60, 170 pound guys that have to eat anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day, just to gain maybe a half a pound a week. And that might sound cool, but that's really annoying. I know I've spoken about that before. That gets really old really fast. And one of the problems that they run into is they don't have the appetite to, well, they think they don't have the appetite, but more it's the foods that they're eating. Like they're eating, they're building their meal plans as if they were cutting. They're trying to fill a lot of their calories with vegetables, with fruit, with whole grains, not drinking any calories, no fruit juice. That's another thing. When you're cutting, do not drink calories. It's a really bad idea. It's that you're eating up calories and with no satiety. You can drink a cup of orange juice. It's like 100 calories and it's not going to do anything to make you feel full. So what they'll have low fat dairy products, these guys that are trying to gain weight or girls. So that strategy is great for when you're losing weight, but when you're gaining weight, when you want to gain weight and you're having trouble hitting your calorie requirements, that's where you flip to the whole fat. You flip to the fattier meats. Maybe it's chicken thighs or fattier types of red meat, and whole fat dairy. And you don't have to go with refined grains. There's no necessary reason to do it. I would probably still stick with whole grains, but I would stick with more. I'd do like whole grain pasta or, there are certain types of whole grain breads that are quite calorie dense. I would be doing, I also with that. So if I'm going to be doing a snack, let's say I'm going to do a sandwich, it's going to be like some calorie dense bread. It's going to be, in terms of protein. I mean, I don't do sandwiches, but I don't know. I guess the same thing would be like deli meat, right? Whatever you're gonna do for protein. But I'd probably use like whole fat mayo or butter the bread. Like you need to add calories without adding a bunch of volume. That's the key. And to do that, you have to really think about the foods that you're eating and choose higher calorie options. Yes, you should be eating a few servings of fruits and vegetables every day, but you don't need to be eating 10. You know what I mean? And many guys, they find that even when they do it right, so they're like really building out each meal to stuff calories in there, that they have to drink calories on top of that just to get to, you know, where they can gain weight. And for that, you can get a weight gainer type of product. I'm not a real fan of what's out there because they just contain a lot of shit ingredients. And I'm going to end up making my own, probably with Legion, and just do a better one. But, for now, what I recommend is that guys like drink fruit juice or do smoothies that, you know, where you blend up a bunch of fruit and you can put also, you can put something like, if you like coconut oil, you can put some of that in there. Like it's easy to add calories. It's much easier to drink calories when it comes to fruits, than it is to eat it when you are constantly feeling full and sick of eating. So those are really the main points to keep in mind in terms of like, you probably have, if you caught that I'm eating this oatmeal dish, a lot of carbs, 200, 250 carbs, late at night. So later, whatever, 10 o'clock, 9:30. And just to reiterate, that doesn't matter. It's numbers. You can eat all the carbs you want. I used to think there was like, going back to even the thing I was talking about earlier, where there was like a theory that maybe that was bad. Maybe it was bad to spike your insulin levels because it could interfere with growth hormone production. And you get your biggest spike of growth hormone production when you're sleeping. And would eating a bunch of carbohydrates before that, you know, mess that up? There's a theory on that, which is why I used to recommend people like, basically I'd say like, we don't really know, but it's probably a better idea to not. But now there's just more research that's come out that is used to sell different types of diets, ironically, that just shows that it doesn't matter. Your body figures it out, works around it. So you can eat as much carbohydrates, eat as much as you want, as late as you want. So long as when your head hits the pillow at night, you're within your numbers. And within your numbers means if you're cutting, I would say be within 50 calories of your target. And if you're bulking, I would say be within 100 calories of your target. I mean, ideally, I try to stay within 50 regardless, but it's more important when you're cutting, I think, to be, you know, really, really on target with your intake, so you can get it over with as quickly as possible, essentially, and not give yourself that leeway. So that's the most important thing. You can eat a lot of protein in each meal. You can eat a little protein, break it up throughout the day. It doesn't really matter. There is a bit of research on protein timing that shows that eating protein every few hours may be a bit more anabolic over time. We're not quite sure yet. Again, that's one of those things that, to play it safe, I like to eat protein every few hours, but I'm not, you know, I don't think that's going to make a huge difference. So I think that covers everything. Of course, I've written a lot about this, and you can check out the articles that I'm linking down below and find out more if you'd like. But hope that helps, and happy dieting. Hey, it's Mike again. Hope you liked the podcast. If you did, go ahead and subscribe. I put out new episodes every week or two where I talk about all kinds of things related to health and fitness and general wellness. Also, head over to my website at www.muscleforlife.com, where you'll find not only past episodes of the podcast, but you'll also find a bunch of different articles that I've written. I release a new one almost every day, actually. I release kind of like 4 to 6 new articles a week. And you can also find my books and everything else that I'm involved in over at muscleforlife.com. All right. Thanks again. Bye.